Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod, here to talk about some Spartan news. We'll be discussing the exit of assistant coach Mark Montgomery and his potential replacements, and some current roster news with the portal. Hopefully everyone had a nice spring break if you're at that stage in your life. If not, I hope you enjoy the rainy 40-degree spring weather. Either way, we appreciate you and all the support you lend the show, either by rating and reviewing the show on your podcast player, visiting our great sponsors, or giving one-time gifts or monthly gifts, all of which can be found on our support page at www.tffinots.com/support. A little update on our bracket challenge. It's been interesting as this tournament has gone chalk-ish, I guess I'd say. Out of the 116 entries, notable entrants put Bracket Dom at 8th. I'm at 17th. Gabe from Nudge Printing's at 46. Kurt from the Gutter Brothers at 49th. And Rod at 111th.
Well, look, here's the thing. In my defense, I didn't have a single one seed getting to the Final Four because I just believed that parity was going to produce a tournament much like we saw last year. And of course we have half the field is a one seed. So because I didn't have a one seed, I picked a fair amount of upsets, some of which I got right, but a lot I didn't. I certainly didn't have NC State making this kind of run. I had Kentucky going to the Final Four, I believe, if memory serves, and we know how that played out. So, yeah, you know, when you take big swings, sometimes you're fortunate, and you might be
sometimes
Ohtani.
You're Javi Baez.
I was going to say a Rob Deere to go with an even older reference, but
that's really old.
Mago works as well.
So current standings also, interestingly, have my wife in 5th place as we're recording this before the game's on Saturday. We had quite the conversation last night. I told her that there's no way that she's going to get any prizes if she gets in the top 3, which she is actually at risk for getting because she still has national champion potential, Connecticut, in her bracket.
Very good chance.
So she definitely has a chance to move up a couple places.
Anybody above her also pick UConn?
The person in first place right now has UConn.
Well, then she's probably got no shot.
And second and fourth place have no one left in the Final Four. So,
Then she's got a shot for the three for sure, top three.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot better than her office challenge where I think she was second to last. So it just goes to show you. And, the thing all about parity is you can just as likely have a bunch of ones as you can have not ones, right?
Absolutely.
For parity.
Absolutely.
That's,
absolutely.
It's the random nature of the tournament anyway, but it's certainly more so recently of recent years, I think.
But in fairness though, there's no question that the elite teams, the teams that were on top all year nationally, have just clearly demonstrated their superiority in this field. I mean, UConn in particular has had.
Oh yeah.
Now, granted, they haven't had to play a lot of really great opposition, but that's how it goes. You play what's in front of you, and they have absolutely decimated the teams they faced in their regional. And I think, Purdue's been tested a little more, but Purdue has also come through very, very nicely in this field, and I think really demonstrated that. That was always my position on them, It's, look, you have to doubt them and their guard play and all of that until they prove otherwise. Well, they've proven otherwise now. They got to this point. So you can't doubt it anymore in regard to this team. So I think that's, you know, those teams have clearly demonstrated when people talk about them kind of having separated themselves. Well, and not that a one-game elimination tournament is definitive proof of the overall quality of a team. It's not. But the performance of those two teams, I think, has just served as further validation of that idea of what they proved over the first 30-whatever games.
They haven't really sweated at all through four games. I mean, they've
not really.
That's usually a good sign that you're going to make it all the way to the end. The teams that just like totally dominate into the first couple games usually.
It's rare. We don't see this very often. I mean, I have to go back and look, but I know for a period of time, for a good long period of time, Michigan State in 1979, I believe, was the only team to win a title, but winning all its games by double digits. I'm not sure whether that still holds. Something tells me it doesn't, but I know this much. It's a very difficult thing to do. And when you have that kind of run as those two teams basically have, it serves as validation of what you did during the regular season and your conference tournament that, oh, okay, you really are this good. It's a funny thing too, because I have to tell you, when I think about dominant teams, I think about teams like, UNLV in 1991. Yeah. That to me still is during my lifetime of watching sports, because IU's undefeated team was just before I really started paying attention. That UNLV team is in my mind, it's the gold standard for what dominance looks like. And there have been other great teams. Patino's teams at Kentucky in the mid-90s were extremely good, filled with NBA talent. They were great. North Carolina in 2009, the team that wrecked Michigan State's hopes for a third title, that team was dominant. Something in me, and it may just be me, I'll admit that, something in me, there's a block for me in putting this UConn team or even this Purdue team in the same conversation with those groups. Like, I look at them and I don't think Cam Spencer is a really nice basketball player, but I don't think he's never struck me as a top tier guy on a truly elite team, a historically elite team. But then you look at I'm just using that as an example, but then you look at the performance and you say, well, you can't argue with the results, right? So we'll see. I mean, obviously, if either one of those teams want to lay claim to that, they got to go win it. And I like the odds of it being one of those two at this point, because I can't imagine NC State beating Purdue, and I can't imagine Alabama beating UConn, but you never know.
Yeah, that's why you play the games, I suppose. Yeah, the hard thing, I think, is looking at these huge teams, you don't see them loaded with NBA talent.
And well, that's part of those teams, for sure.
A lot of teams you're talking about in the past were like at least two or three players who were, if not
absolutely,
NBA, were borderline. And so
that's a great point. That's a great point. And that's exactly, I think you've hit on exactly what it is, that I look at the talent, the objective quote-unquote talent, whatever that's supposed to mean. But one good way of defining it, though, is what you just said. Like, how many guys on that team are going to play in the NBA? When I look at Purdue, there's a possibility that somebody like Miles Colvin could develop into that. But in terms of the guys that are playing a lot, there's one guy, and I'm not sure how long he's going to play in the NBA. I know people are more optimistic on Edie now than they were a year ago, but I don't know that I'm convinced that he's going to be a 10-year pro. UConn, the picture is a little better. Their freshman guard is going to likely go in the lottery, and I could imagine maybe one or two other guys, but yeah, you're absolutely right. There are not those, you know, every one of those teams that I mentioned had guys that were lottery picks, that not even just pros, like guys who were supposed to be
really, really good pros and usually were. I mean, Kentucky, that team had Antoine Walker, who was a longtime NBA All-Star level player. I'm probably missing some guys too, but obviously UNLV had Larry Johnson and Stacey Augmon, but Larry Johnson especially was a great pro. Greg Anthony was a pro forever. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, personally, I haven't watched a whole lot of tournament games, partly because I was on vacation. And once Michigan State is knocked out, I tend not to watch a whole lot just because I got other things going on. But because of my wife this year, I've watched quite a few Iowa women's games. Although I'm fairly certain that if it weren't for Caitlin Clark and being on Iowa, I wouldn't watch it just to watch her. I don't know about you. I don't find the women's game terribly interesting to watch. I think they kind of play like me. They're stuck on the ground. They don't move up in the, they're not in the air very much. And it's all just layups and threes. And I find the game, I don't know. It's just not quite as interesting to me just because it just seems like it's all threes and layups. I suppose it's like when I watch the NBA, it's kind of like that. There's not much mid-range stuff. Just like watching the game, watched the UConn last night, it was almost every shot was at the rim or behind the arc. But let's move on to this meat eater discussion, which is Mark Montgomery and the portal update. So Mark Montgomery is moving on to University of Detroit Mercy. His career arc had him playing Michigan State under Judd Heathcote from 88 to 92. He then played a year of pro ball in Lithuania and then took over as an assistant coach at Central Michigan from 97 to 2002. He was an assistant coach at Michigan State after then from 2002 to 2011, when he took over the head coaching position at Northern Illinois in the MAC. Had some success there, but eventually they kind of faded it away. He was fired in 2021. I think he was at UDM for like, I don't know.
Three weeks.
A couple weeks. And then was hired on as assistant coach at Michigan State once they had an opening. I think it's when Dwayne Stevens left, right?
I can't remember whether that was either. There were two moves. There was DJ getting the job at Western, and then Mike Garland retired. And so it was Mark Montgomery and Doug Wojcik. I can't remember which.
Yeah. I can't remember which triggered which.
Replaced the other. Yeah.
Anyway, so he's been on Michigan State staff again from 2021 until now. And so we were never quite sure if he was looking for another head coaching position. Obviously he was, and he took the UDM position, which they had a historically terrible season. And so he's taking over at UDM. And so, you know, best of luck to him, obviously. And so our discussion is not about Mark Montgomery so much. I guess we talked about him a little bit, but more on sort of his successors, what it will look like, I think, for Michigan State. And Tom Izzo is to fill that space, but we can talk about Mark a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about Mark, and let's also talk about the staff in general. So first with him, I mean, congrats to him. That's great that he's getting a second opportunity. It's not going to be an easy one.
No.
You know, University of Detroit has some great basketball tradition. I mean, it really does, and younger listeners probably aren't aware of that. I mean, you can go back to the 60s. Dave DeBuscher played there, who was a big-time NBA player. Then you go into the 70s, the Dick Vitale, Smokey Gaines era, where they were truly a great program, produced several pros, Terry Tyler, John Long, Terry Durod, Earl Curran. That's four guys I just named who had long NBA careers that came out of U of D in the 70s. They were a legit program. Then they went through a period in the 80s where it didn't really work for the most part. And then they got rejuvenated by Perry Watson, former Detroit Southwestern head coach, former University of Michigan assistant. I'm not particularly a fan of Perry Watson, but you can't argue with the fact that he won a lot, and it was sustained success for a long time. They had some tournament bids, et cetera. He left, and it's kind of been back to the 80s, the late 70s, and the end of the tail end of the 70s and the 80s for UD, where they're searching for relevance. They've had a number of different coaches. Haven't worked out. Yeah, there was a period where Ray McCallum Sr. was there, who for a brief time had his son, who was an exceptional player about close to 15 years ago now. but it didn't produce much in the way of sustained winning, obviously. They had former Michigan assistant Bakari Alexander, didn't work out there. There was some off the court stuff that didn't go well for him either. And then most recently, Mike Davis, the former Indiana and several other places head coach, who had his son end up with the second best scoring season in men's basketball history, his son Antoine. But it didn't produce much again in the way of wins. And this season, as you said, was historically bad with his son even that much gone. It just didn't work. The problem that U of D has right now is, and it's especially an issue at the moment we're talking, is for a lot of the periods of their success in the 60s, 70s, and then again in the 90s under Perry Watson, they didn't really have competition in this part of the state at their level. You know, Central and Eastern and Western, yes, they would dip into Southeast Michigan as well, but U of D kind of had a niche that they occupied. Well, that's no longer true, because starting at the end of the 90s, Oakland was elevated to a D1 program. And yeah, they had the great success this year in the NCAA tournament. They won the Horizon regular season and conference tournament. Great season for Greg Campy. But Greg Campy, even in years where Oakland hasn't had that level of success, has been clearly the better program than U of D for a long time. And so anybody that's about to be recruited can't remember a time where U of D was better than Oakland or was even really very relevant in college basketball. That's what they're dealing with. So Mark Montgomery is going to have to overcome that issue, the Oakland issue, because they're going to compete for the same players, you know?
Right.
And also, I would say the other niche that Oakland has had, it hasn't been true very much lately, although this team did have one guy who was an example of it. Oakland has become kind of a default option for Michigan kids, and especially Southeast Michigan kids, who start at a bigger program and end up transferring home.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of those. And that would be another way where Mark Montgomery might be able to jumpstart his program if he could get some of those types of guys. But it's going to be tough. If for as long as Greg Campy is in Oakland, it's going to be tough. That said, Mark Montgomery clearly has a history of working in this state. He's from the Metro Detroit area, played at Southgate Aquinas. So he has the relationships and the experience to have a shot at recruiting in Michigan. And again, as we talk about or are going to talk about in this episode, the portal has also changed everything, because to one extent or another, no matter who you are, it has changed the way you recruit high school players. And at most places, I would say you can argue recruiting high school players is less important than it used to be.
Well, and I think, you know, it's probably true that Detroit has less talent too than it has had in the past, right? I mean, just because the city of Detroit is smaller.
That's true, but, you know, some of that has moved either to Catholic schools or the suburbs. It is true that it doesn't produce elite talent at the same rate. But U of D was never getting, for the most part, the elite talent. They were getting guys who were undervalued. Now, you know, somebody like Perry Watson found guys who were NBA or close to NBA caliber and recruited them successfully. He had a few of those guys, Willie Green being the most successful in the NBA, but he had some others. And that kind of, there's still, let's put it this way, there's still enough good talent in the Metro Detroit area that a school like U of D could use that as a base for their program. They just haven't done it. Mike Davis just completely abdicated recruiting. I don't even know. I'd have to go back and look at their roster this year, but boy, if they had Michigan kids, they didn't have many. And I just think that's hard to do. You know, you look at Greg Campy's program as a contrast, and he's almost always got a lot of Michigan kids. His team this year had a lot of Michigan kids. So,
yeah.
You know, I still think that matters.
Well, we'll begin the discussion here then
Let's not go into that until just a second.
Okay.
Because I do want to say there is a distinct possibility that this is not the only staff change.
Okay.
There is another staff member, and I'm not going to specify who or where, who may have a similar opportunity to the one Mark Montgomery had. I do not believe that my understanding is that person's not going to be leaving the staff unless he gets a head coaching job. Further, the specific place that is a possibility for him, to my knowledge, as we're recording this on whatever it is April 7th? Is that
Could
the date today?
Sixth.
Yeah.
Sixth.
That job has not opened up yet, but I have heard rumors that it might, and if it does, this guy would be the likely choice to become the head coach there. It also makes a lot of sense that he would be the choice. I'll just leave it at that. So there is the possibility that there's a second opening. That's why I wanted to get that out there before we start talking about potential replacements, because you could see two guys from this list, or you could see one guy and somebody who's off the list. I've also heard setting up the list, and this is the guys we're going to talk about are names that I'm speculating on. I think with some good reason. I think it's in, let's call it slightly educated speculation, but I think there are additional names. I've got four guys listed. My understanding is the list itself is more like six or seven right now.
Okay.
So we'll see. And there have been times where it's been a surprise. When they brought Doug Wojcik in the first time, way back, whatever that was, 04, that was kind of off the page. That wasn't one that was really seen as likely. Most of the time with MSU assistants, it's fairly easy to figure out who the names are going to be because they're people with connections to the program. They coached here previously in some capacity. They played here. You know,
grad
assistant one
or
the
something.
Other.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's begin the discussion. Let's sort of set the, I don't want to say ground rules, but we'll set the table so that it makes sense for everyone. The likely assistant coaching in or basketball, at least my understanding is it's someone who is going to basically carry out the head coach's, their philosophy. They're going to be an extension of the head coach. This is not so much like football where you have someone who may just bring in a totally different perspective, like offensive scheme or defensive scheme,
right,
with a coordinator, something like that. So the assistant coaches have a different, I guess, role in basketball. And every coach is certainly different, but at least the way Tom Izzo has always worked it is they tend to do everything. They tend to be involved in recruiting. They're involved in every aspect of the team. So they're not just one part or the other. That said, I guess it makes sense then that whoever he's going to have is someone who's going to generally be okay with how he coaches and how he runs things. Also, that he's not going to get people who he doesn't know or feel comfortable working with. And that's probably the case for just about every head coach. I mean, there are certain ones who have, you know, just started in the business. They don't know anybody. And so they're just, you know, get a recommendation from a friend or something like that, or from other coaches, you know, this person would be good for your staff. So I think the thought that you're going to bring someone in to do a specific task is maybe not realistic or probable. Now, I guess Borovich they brought in, who was, you know, brought in a different sort of idea for, you know, for recruiting. So anyway, it's unlikely that we're going to find someone who is going to come in and say, hey, Tom, this is how you should run the team. I mean, that sort of thing's not going to happen. Also, we talked about briefly, one last thing. We talked real briefly this season about, you know, they need to get someone who can coach a certain way. And that was sort of the discussion with, you know, how much of the improvement from a player is from coaching and how much is from their work by themselves. obviously amount of time with the coaching staff is somewhat limited. They certainly do have opportunities to work with the coach, and they do make a difference in their development. But, you know, whether someone develops or not is many times a reflection of the player's willingness to do something in their, you know, God-given talents, let's say, than it is the coach's ability to teach someone, right? I mean, just because you see
said a lot of, yes, you do. Yeah. I do.
I'll let you go on because that's a lot of stuff.
You've said a lot of stuff there, pretty much all of which I agree with. Look, modern football, the head coach, and you hear this said all the time, the head coach is essentially a CEO.
Yeah.
Right? They set the vision. They coach the coaches, but they are not typically, like when Dan Campbell is coaching the Detroit Lions, Dan Campbell certainly will have input in what an offensive scheme might look like in a given game, but he's not the primary voice in saying that. Ben Johnson is, right? And it's true at the college level as well. You know, Jonathan Smith is not going to, now Jonathan Smith will probably have more input on the offensive side than the defensive side because that's his background. He was a quarterback. You know, I believe he was an offensive coordinator, but his coordinator is going to do the heavy lifting on game days. And even before that, in terms of developing the game plan for that week, that's not college basketball. Now I do want to offer a caveat to what you've said, which is, I think, generally true, that the assistant coaches are going to carry out the vision of the head coach. And again, because the natures of the sport are very different, the numbers are very different, the head coach is, in most places, heavily involved in game planning, in the tactics that they're going to employ,
right?
All of that, the system that they run on both ends, all of that, absolutely true. The caveat to that is there are some exceptions to that. The one that I think probably impacts Michigan State fans thinking about this, and they don't realize what an outlier it is because it was local, was Michigan under John Beilein. John Beilein finally got tired of having great offensive teams and terrible defensive teams. And so he brought in a couple of different coaches to serve as defensive coordinators is what they called it. And those guys brought in a system defensively, and they taught it. And my understanding is Beilein kind of let that happen. And he focused on the offense, and it worked. It worked really well his last few years. Michigan actually became a really, really good defensive program toward the tail end of his run because of that. And again, the proximity of it, I think, leads a lot of fans, maybe a lot of younger fans who don't have as much experience with the broad vision of how the sport operates, to think that that's normal. It's not. It's highly, 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 highly abnormal. It doesn't happen. Can I throw in another highly? It doesn't happen very often. It's not going to happen at Michigan State. Tom Izzo does not see a problem with the way he approaches things from a strategic point of view. He doesn't. You can feel that way, you know, listener, fan. You could feel that, well, they take too many long twos. It should be the Nate Oates school of threes or at the rim, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Because the analytics demonstrate those are better quality shots. They're more productive. Okay, you can feel free to take issue with anything other than that approach. That's fine. There's a rational argument to be made along those lines, but that's not going to be how Tom Izzo sees the game. And he's not going to suddenly bring in an analytics guru as if they don't utilize analytics in a heavy way anyway. Trust me, they do. I know I can understand how somebody following casually might assume that they don't because they hear some of the things that Izzo might say. I think in a lot of those instances, that stuff's been distorted. And if you don't view it in the proper context, you will come away with the wrong impression. Trust me, Michigan State makes heavy, heavy use of analytics. Let's keep in mind, Kevin Pagua, who is one of the main guys in the analytics field, is a Michigan State basketball guy. That's where he works.
Yeah.
So, come on. You know, I mean, let's stay grounded in reality here. Okay. But they're not going to bring in anybody who's a, you know, oh, this guy's a defensive specialist. You know, now, particularly if there is a second change in the program, might they be looking specifically for a guy who has a particular background, like the favorite rallying cry this year during the later report of this year? Yeah. Got to get somebody who knows how to coach big men. Well, again, I heard that stuff when Dwayne Stevens was here. So what does that mean? You know, but that said, if they were to lose another guy from the staff, well, might they have a need for somebody specifically with a background to coach a particular position group? Yeah, that might factor in. But the chances that Izzo's going to go completely off board and bring in somebody he doesn't have a relationship with, I think, is very slim. It probably grows a little bit if there are two openings to fill rather than one. If it remains just Mark Montgomery, I'd be very, very, very surprised to see it not be someone. So anyway, with that as preamble.
And I think it's fair to say that Tom Izzo has a lot of relationships. So it is potentially a very large pool of people that we're talking about.
Sure.
Other ones that are more. So, sure. You know. Just because we'll talk a few people.
But before we get into the list, though, I want to respond to that. But that said, that's what's usually said. People say, oh, yeah, but he knows a million people. He could go anywhere. No, the history tells us that's not what happens.
Well, right. Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's true. And that's the thing. Like, you know a lot of people.
That's why
I mentioned. He's had the opportunity to talk a bunch of people. Like, what do you think of this person? How were
right.
they? You know, he knows that's the information he's going to have.
But again, that's why I mentioned Wojcik, because Wojcik was very much off the board.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't mean he didn't know him, didn't have a relationship with him before he brought him in. But that's the exception rather than the rule. Just look at the staffs over time.
Yeah.
You know, even Dane Fife. Dane Fife is somebody he recruited incredibly hard. He didn't play at Michigan State. He hadn't coached at Michigan State before he got the job. But it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So so I guess the we'll just assume right now there's one position. If you can imagine, if there's a second, that this list, you can use this list, or then maybe additionals, but we'll start with just this. The obvious choice, I guess, would be John Borvich, who came on joined the staff last year as recruiting coordinator, which is a non-coaching position. So he does not travel with the team. You'll see him there on the bench for home games, along with all the other million grad assistants and such. So he was a longtime assistant coach at Northern Illinois with Montgomery. He was then an assistant coach under Chris Collins at Northwestern, joined the staff a couple years ago as recruiting director of recruiting operations. So then that'd be sort of the number four person if you had like some sort of hierarchy in general. So
absolutely,
that'd be the logical move for him to move over, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what'll happen.
Right. That's where I would start. And I have heard different things about what his desire is to get back into a full-time assistance position rather than the position he's in. I mean, the assumption, I think, when he came over from Northwestern, because it's not normal that a guy leaves a position to take a quote unquote lesser position elsewhere, even though I'm not sure that there was any, I would guess there wasn't any difference financially, maybe made a little more at Michigan State. But he came out of the Michigan State program. He was a grad assistant at Michigan State. So he had, and as you say, he coached under Monty at Northern Illinois for a while. So he had pretty deep connections to the MSU program. And I think the assumption was, well, he'll come in, do that job. And then, you know, when there's an opportunity, he'll probably come into the staff. That's been my working assumption. But I have heard things that suggest that might not be a lock as much as I originally assumed it would be, that he would want that. you know, Michigan State is a very demanding place to work for these assistants. There's a lot asked of them, and it's a to call it a full-time job is an understatement. So it's possible that you might be a person who looks at that and says, you know what, I don't know that I need that. I have also heard, now I'd be very surprised by this, very surprised, but you can't rule it out, that he might have interest in going, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Mark Montgomery does with his
right.
staff.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised by that. You'd really have to wonder, okay, you left a Big Ten assistant job, took this recruiting coordinator job for a couple of years, and now you're going to be an assistant in the Horizon. That seems, but I still think he's the first name on the list for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a lot of assistant coaching experience. He's got a lot of experience in this program. He's been really good in that director of recruiting position. And Michigan State's recruiting, I would say, you know, we talk about how the head coach is the one who matters, and that's absolutely true. But one thing a recruiting coordinator can do is maybe set the table a little differently. And I don't think it's coincidence that Michigan State's recruiting scope has broadened a little bit in the last 2 years. We've talked about it, right?
Yeah, right. Nationally,
You've seen guys from different parts of the country that typically saw Michigan State get involved with. And I look, that's all Izzo's the one who wanted that. That's why they hired him, because he had those kind of connections. He'd worked at places where it was much more difficult to recruit to, and so he kind of had to do that, broaden the scope, and he's brought that to Michigan State, and I think he's definitely been a part of that. So if he were to move into an assistant job and he's no longer doing that, well, that's a position that you got to fill, and that's an important position. So it's worth considering that too. But right now, he'd still be my first name, but we just got to see where it goes.
Sure. So then next on the list is Chris Fowler. He's an assistant at Western Michigan under Duane Stevens, former GA at Michigan State, his brother Benny Fowler, football player. He also spent some time at Northern Arizona.
Yeah, and so again, he's a younger guy, still in his 30s, I'm sure. But he's got some experience. He had experience at Michigan State, which all these guys we're going to talk about have in one way or another. And then he's gone out. He's worked for a couple of other coaches. Most recently, as you say, the last couple of years, DJ Stevens at Western. The question there is, how does Izzo feel about the experience level that he wants? So right now, I don't think it would be a major issue, because you're only talking about Mark Montgomery gone. He's got Doug Wojcik, who's got massive amounts of experience.
Yeah.
And then Thomas Kelly is on the younger side of that, although he had some before he at Western, actually, before he came to Michigan State. Fowler would be in a somewhat similar place to where TK was when he got hired at Michigan State. So that would be okay. But if you're replacing two coaches on the staff, maybe experience becomes a bit more of a factor. I don't know. That's just me speculating. That's not informed by anything. But yeah,
right.
Chris Fowler's a young coach that people have I've heard a lot of good things about. So again, natural name to surface when you're talking about this kind of opening.
Then everyone's favorite, Tom Nairn, former player, obviously, recently. He was a GA at Michigan State. He coached at Sunrise Christian Academy, which is where he played in high school.
Yep.
He had a non-coaching position at the Suns. He's been an assistant coach at Southern Utah with Todd Simons. And then also currently he's at Bowling Green, and has been, by all accounts, successful and done well. And as we kind of know what kind of person he was, great guy, you know. And so anyway, every reason to think that at some point he ends up at Michigan State if Tom Izzo's around long enough. Is this the time? That's one of the questions I guess we could ask.
Yeah, and look, he's been part of two really good seasons, both at Southern Utah and Bowling Green. They had a lot of success. And he's been working under Todd Simon, who's a native of Fowler, so he's a mid-Michigan guy. I think that's probably been part of the connection why he got those jobs. But a good start to his career, and but not a ton of experience. So that's the issue. Does personality and enthusiasm and energy and work ethic and all those things, does that outweigh the experience factor? I don't know.
Yeah.
The lack of a long time track record where it's just 2 years as an assistant, that would be the negative. But boy, there are a lot of positives. Now, the levels he's been working at, you're never going to get a sense, a true sense of how good a recruiter somebody could be, because you've got, you know, you're
yeah.
restricted to a certain level of player, right?
Exactly.
As
yeah,
opposed
right.
to a Michigan State. But boy, oh boy, just knowing the background of Tom, I would have to think that he's a guy who would be an outstanding recruiter at the high major level. I'd be shocked if it was anything, any way other than that.
Yeah.
He was a great recruiter while he was at Michigan State. I mean, when you listen to, if you go back to when guys like Josh Langford and Miles Bridges were being recruited, they said Tom Nairn was a major factor in them choosing Michigan State. Believe it. So he's already done it. That's why I have no question that you put that guy in a high major program and say, go recruit kids. He's going to be a factor. Now, you know, we talk about this in regard to assistants. And again, it's big. It's bigger in football than it is in basketball, that assistants have major sway in basketball. Unless you're talking about guys in the old days, pre-NIL, where assistants were bag men, basically. They were guys who had, and you still see it. I mean, you got this Tim Armstrong character floating around on Illinois' bench. That's what he is primarily. I mean, he came from a training background too, so I'm not going to say he doesn't contribute to anything else. I think he does, but you know, he came out of an AAU, a major AAU program in the Chicago area, and his role was in getting guys to come to the school he was coaching at. That's not the Tom Izzo approach. That's not the approach that exists in a lot of places. Most college programs, the head coach is the end game guy. That's the guy who's going to make or break your recruiting efforts. Just because you have an assistant who's supposedly a great recruiter, that's probably not going to be the major factor in the end in recruiting decisions. But that said, can an assistant help? Are they good in talent identification? So do they get you in early with guys? You know, are they at least not hurting the effort, which is something to be considered, because there are some assistants who I could tell you stories about that I've heard off the record who did not help Michigan State's recruiting efforts.
Yeah.
With certain guys, you know, and then there are guys who do. Dwayne Stevens always had that reputation as a very good recruiter. I think Tom would be a very, very helpful character in that phase of the game. But again, the experience thing is the issue with him. Has he gotten enough of it that Izzo feels like, all right, it's time to bring him home?
Yeah, and then, as you mentioned too, like, you know, if Doug Wojcik departed the team and now you've got Thomas Kelly, who's relatively, you know, young and recent coaching experience, do you feel like you could have a few guys who have very little experience?
That's my point.
Which then brings us to the next candidate list is Saadi Washington. He's been assistant at Michigan for a long time. He served under Beilein and Juwan Howard. He's from Sexton. His father played at Michigan State. He also coached at Oakland and also with Nate Oates at Ryan Mills High School. So he's been around in the state of Michigan for a long time. He's got a lot of coaching experience. And so, you know, he could be that person you bring from sort of outside the family-ish, right, that may have a lot more experience, certainly, than a lot of these other candidates we're talking about.
And before people start going crazy saying, well, why would they bring in a guy with Michigan ties? It should be known that Saadi Washington was actually involved at different points in his career in interviews for potentially becoming part of the Michigan State staff. His dad not only played at Michigan State, he's one of the all-time greats, Stan Washington. Look him up. He's a three-time All-Big Ten player. So, and he went to Sexton. He grew up in the area. So, yeah, you know, this is a guy who, it's not the normal situation. Now, it's unclear right now where he sits. You know, Michigan obviously has new coaching staff with Dusty May. I have not heard definitively that he won't have an opportunity to be part of that new staff. I just don't, there's been nothing in terms of, the one thing I've heard about is that Dusty May is supposedly bringing in the former Oklahoma State head coach, Mike Boynton, who's going to be one of his assistants. But who else fills out that staff? You know, I could see a case where May might look at it and say, well, I want a guy with a Michigan background, and Soddy's been doing this for a long time, and retain him just the way that Juwan Howard did.
Yeah.
He got the job, you know. But his name has been coming up in connection with Michigan State. And so you wouldn't rule it out. Now, the one bit of raw meat you could throw some of the people who obsess about certain aspects of this stuff is Soddy Washington did have as one of his responsibilities coaching big men at Michigan, both under Beilein, and I believe he retained that under Howard, although I have to believe Howard got involved in that too.
Sure. Yeah.
But so he does have that background. And
right.
And so if you like that, Soddy Washington is a guy who brings that. And he's got a good, despite what happened to Michigan in the end, Soddy Washington has a good reputation. It's a little strange to me that he's not become a head coach, because the word was he could have had the job at Western, and he turned it down twice. He's an alum. He played at Western. But that's what I've heard. He was supposedly a finalist for the UDM job that Mark Montgomery just got. So he did try to move there, but it's a little surprising because he's been a name that seemed likely to be moving into a head coaching opportunity for a while. And for a variety of reasons, same way it happened with DJ Stevens. That took a lot longer to happen than I think people would have expected.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily negative, but he's an interesting name, and I don't think you could rule it out, and I especially don't think you could rule it out if there were to be another change on Michigan State staff. Because then you really are talking about, well, do we need somebody with experience?
Now, exactly.
Borovich gives you that if he's one of the guys. But, you know, if he's not and they hire a younger guy in one of these spots and then there's a second spot, well, you really do need to think about that. So.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that is worth considering, you know, we don't know how long Tom Izzo is going to be at Michigan State. I assume at least 5 years, but that's just, you know, my assumption. And you don't know from health reasons at all, et cetera, you know, all sorts of different possibilities. It is not unreasonable to look at for candidates you may not even imagine might look at this assistant coaching position at Michigan State as a potentially better than usual assistant coaching position, because if you do well, and you're well thought regarded, and you get along, you know, you may be the obvious choice to succeed him afterwards, right?
And
so who knows? I think, you know, that's why this might be, you know, a little
possibly
different coaching job than usual, like 10 years ago or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just
and that's all well said. And I would also add that, you know, those are the four obvious names that I've got. There are other ones I could. You know, Matt McQuaid was on Michigan State staff, and he left this year. I believe he's in Houston with the Rockets in a non-coaching capacity. But could he be a name? I don't know. Could there be another name from MSU staff, somebody like Austin Thornton?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but usually you're not seeing guys kind of jump the queue that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I didn't include them. But they could be under consideration. And again, there could be other names, absolutely, that we haven't discussed that are in the mix, but those were the four that seemed very obvious to me.
So we probably expect to hear about this in the next couple months. I think last time it took a little while thing is, you know, the season's still going for some teams. The four teams still playing. And so I think there's still a lot of shuffling that still has to occur within college basketball ranks. As people move and their openings, new openings show up, then those get filled and they get create new openings. And so there's a lot of stuff, a lot of dominoes that have to fall for all this stuff to work itself out. So, and it's not something that needs to be to happen right away. It's not like you need to fill a roster position that if you miss out on someone, you're hosed. You know, you absolutely need. I think there's not the urgency that there might be with a player, you know, filling. Which brings us to the next second part of discussion is the portal discussion. It is not officially, I guess, roster season. It is for most teams, but not every team. There's like, again, there are still teams playing. And so not all the positions are open that we know about. And so we'll find out more as time goes on. But we do know a few things from Michigan State. Obviously, Tyson Walker, Malik Hall have no longer have any eligibility. By all accounts, A.J. Hogard will not be returning to Michigan State next year. We don't know what his status is as far as what he's going to do yet, as that I'm aware of. But somewhat surprisingly, I think from our original discussion is Mati Sissoko has entered the portal. I think it was pretty clear, at least from a playing situation, what his role would be going into next year, not knowing who Michigan State would add to the roster, but that he'd have a limited role as far as minutes at the five, certainly playing less with Jackson Kohler and Carson Cooper, and then potentially, you know, someone else. That was clear, but I think what you and I didn't know for sure is what his situation as far as NIL, as far as ways to fund his foundation, which is, I think, what's one of the, you know, most of the players are playing for a career in basketball. And I think Mati is not different in that sense. And certainly part of that career is making some money while you play college now and to do whatever you want to do with the money. And he was using it to help his village back in Mali. And so we thought that situation is pretty good at Michigan State. And, you know, what he had his plans were beyond Michigan State was not known to us. We never certainly had asked him. So he's entered the portal. It doesn't mean he's leaving Michigan State, but certainly there's an opportunity that he is and will be heading out to find more minutes, where I'm sure there are plenty of opportunities in schools that will take him as a really great option. And just, you know, where that is, it's hard to say, and what their NIL opportunities and things like that. So he is opening up a position, as far as we can tell, within Michigan State's roster beyond what we had anticipated.
Let's put it this way. The expectation was that at least one of the three fives would go.
Right.
And at the end of the season, based on the way Izzo was talking about it, for a lot of this year, I had anticipated Mati was probably going to be the guy, but then the way things went at the tail end and the way Izzo talked about it post UNC, I changed my mind on that and had a couple conversations with people where it seemed very likely that Mati was going to be back. My understanding is this: MSU was good with him coming back. They wanted him back, and Mati himself wanted to stay. His advisor, guardian, the person in Utah, I'm forgetting his name.
Right, I can't
brought him yet. Over originally, had a thought that, and this is not meant to be nefarious, I don't think it was. Sometimes we get into this, oh, the guardian or the parent or whoever, you know, took them away and they're just selfish. No, it's none of that. For best of intentions, though, my understanding is that person sort of drove this decision with Mati obviously coming along for the ride at the end, and that the decision was made that it was actually best for him to go somewhere else, get an opportunity to play a much bigger role. And I think that's true. If, as you say, if there is a goal to, hey, he wants to go play professionally for a while somewhere in the world, well, you'd rather have more of an opportunity to showcase your game. And his role was not going to be a big one at Michigan State next year, most likely. So it makes some sense. So this is one of those good, on balance, good transfer decisions. Prior to that, my belief was Jackson Kohler was the most likely guy to go. That still might happen. So that's why I'm saying it was unexpected to a degree that it was Mati, but that doesn't mean there won't be more. We just don't know yet.
Right.
But, you know, we've talked about, we don't have to belabor it, but Jackson Kohler's season was really disjointed. And so whether that plays a factor, you know, I've heard some other rumblings about things here and there. My understanding is I think the kid is happy at Michigan State. but there might be other reasons why there's a decision that, yeah, you should probably go find a different opportunity and see if there are better results. So we don't know what that's going to mean. The assumption has been, I think people are wish casting to some extent, but I do think there's a rational reason to think it, especially now, that Michigan State would try to find somebody in the portal at that position. There has been very little suggestion of MSU activity among big men in the portal thus far. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened. What's very clear is Michigan State is a program that tends to do its portal work quietly. That you're not going to see them by, and in fact, this has happened with some guys. They have actually contacted the portal. It's only come out several days after that contract was established.
Right.
So it's not the same as high school recruiting. It's a much murkier picture to try to figure out, well, who's really involved with players. But at least in terms of what's been made public, you have not seen Michigan State getting involved. I maintain that it is very difficult to find, you know, people think, well, when people start citing the names of guys who were recruited as five men in the Big Ten last year out of the portal and say, oh, it could have gotten this guy, could have gotten that guy. You could be successful in another program as a player and still understand that wouldn't have made, you wouldn't be an ideal fit at Michigan State. You wouldn't be a guy that they would be drawn to. Now, again, you could differ with that. You could say, well, Tom Izzo's got to get his head out of his ass, right? If that's what you think. But I'm just telling you, that's, so start from the, we can look at a couple of guys in the Big Ten who've hit the portal. Dane Danger, who just committed to Memphis. He left Illinois, which is something I think we talked about here that seemed likely because his role was reduced there. Why was his role reduced, despite the fact that he's clearly a very good low post scorer and he can rebound? His role was reduced to Illinois because he couldn't handle playing defensively the way they needed a big to play.
Yeah.
He forced you into, you had no choice but to use drop coverage. He wasn't even great in that. Brad Underwood decided that wasn't something he could live with. And so Dane Danger's moved on to Kansas State. Dane Danger could easily, at Kansas State, I could see him having a 15-10 type season. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he would never be a fit for Michigan State.
Right.
He's the defensive end. Zed Key just hit the portal yesterday, I think it was, from Ohio State. Similar thing. I would be surprised to see Michigan State get involved with him because his issues have been at the defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're trying to sort out what guys would they be interested in, I think you have to start there. You know, start with the defensive end. Can this guy play defensively the way that Michigan State needs him to? Because it's a little different than taking a high school guy. Izzo was taking guys like Derek Nix or Nick Ward or Jackson Kohler, guys who came in with an obvious deficiency there, right? But I think his philosophy with those guys was, well, over time, I can get them where they need to be. The problem with going into the portal is in a lot of those instances, you don't have time. You don't have 4 years. You got one right. year, maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it changes the equation. And I think that so it remains to be seen what they do at the five spot. If they were to lose Jackson Kohler, or I guess somebody else, I guess Carson Cooper, although I don't expect that, then yeah, you would think, well, they gotta go get somebody. You know, there's another thought here, which is positionally, the big name locally and even to some extent nationally that hit the portal in the last week was Trey Townsend from Oakland, who had a great season, was Horizon Player of the Year, had two really good tournament games against Kentucky and NC State. And people are clamoring for Michigan State to add him. Look, I think he's a great player. I think he could, in a vacuum, he's a guy who you could put into Michigan State's thing and it would work. And he'd be a productive player. The problem is he's an undersized four man. And yeah, despite what you'll see some people try to claim, I don't know that I believe he can actually play on the wing defensively. So if you add a guy like that, okay, you've added a four, but the only way he's coming to Michigan State is if he's going to start. What does that mean for Xavier Booker? Are you making him a five now? And does that factor in? You know, if they added a Trey Townsend, maybe they don't add a five. Maybe it's Booker sliding to the five. Is that something Booker wants to do? Is that something he's actually best suited for? I think there's a lot of moving parts with this stuff. But for the it has not been made public. I have heard, we'll see about the validity, but I have heard that Michigan State has made, I've heard it a couple places, that they have definitely expressed interest in Trey Townsend. So you can't take that one off the board, but it's a factor in terms of how all these parts fit together.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, right. This is the same discussion we had last year with Jaden Akins, and Jaden Akins questioning whether he wanted to return.
Yeah.
Because what is his role going to be? How is he going to be used? You know, can he highlight the things that they wanted to see from him in the NBA? And that was part of the consideration of whether he was going to return or not. And the same thing would be the case for Booker, for Townsend. Like you said, would you bring in Townsend if you're going to displace Booker? And Booker says, well, you know, this is not what you told me I was going to do, and I was, you know, willing to work the system, and now he leaves. Now, are you better off or worse off losing, you know, that? And so this is the roster construction we talk about all the time, where you look at teams, you're like, what happened here? We said that this year with Michigan, right? It was just like a bizarre, I mean, they've had it for a couple of years where they just have no point guard and they just have like a
right.
strange roster construction. And you have to be cognizant of all these parts and how they work together. And you have to have frank conversations. And I think probably, which Michigan State is probably pretty good at, is small, you know, impressions. The relationship you have with your players and the sort of the trust that you have with each other, sort of what you're going, you know, what is your role going to be? How's it going to work out next year? I think they have those frank discussions, and they don't, you know, pull the wool over the eyes of players. And so at least everyone knows as much as possible sort of what's going on next year, which I think are important. And you can have when you have the sort of relationships that Michigan State has with their players, you know, where you're not remaking the roster every year by, you know, five or six players.
Yeah. And look, it should also be noted that just because there's been no portal activity outside of Mahdi with guys leaving, you don't know that it'll continue that way. You know, it's look, all indications are for the moment that they're going to bring, you know, I mentioned Kohler as a possibility. I have not heard anybody else's name prominently in leaving, which includes Jaden Akins, which I think was a legitimate question to ask. But the noise on that front has not been the same as it was a year ago. And look, Jaden's not, unlike last year, Jaden's not coming off of a great end to his season or a great season in general. But
right.
the way Izzo has talked about him is that he's going to slide into Tyson Walker's role. I would think that's probably enough to keep him around.
Yep.
So I don't expect him to leave. And so if that happens, then you have an opportunity to maybe add someone at the other wing spot. And Izzo has actually talked about wanting to add a bigger wing. And if you look at the guys that have been publicly mentioned with Michigan State, that in three of the four instances, that's exactly the kind of player we're talking about.
Yeah. So let's start with that then.
Yeah.
You want to just launch into the wings, I guess, they're looking at. Javon Hadley, 6'7" wing, played at Colorado last year, played a year at Northeastern with Tyson. He averaged 11.6 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, shot 54% from the floor, 42% from three, although that was pretty low volume, even less volume than Malik Hall was averaging, I think.
Yep.
He was 84% from the line, averaging just a little four free throw attempts a game. So he's the one, I think, recently that's been very publicly between Iowa State and Michigan State.
Yeah, that's what was said. He did Zoom calls with both schools late last week. And then the story was that he was going to visit one of them after that and would look to make a decision by Friday. Well, we're recording this on Saturday. So Friday came and went. He hasn't made a decision, to my knowledge, as we're recording this. He's got connections at both schools. They seem deeper at Iowa State. There's an assistant coach he has a background with, and then there's his cousin. At Michigan State, he played high school basketball with Trey Holloman. And as you said, he played a year with Tyson Walker, who's no longer going to be at the Michigan State, but, you know, there's still a connection there.
Sure.
So I don't know. I don't know. To my knowledge, he has not visited Michigan State yet, although, again, with the way they're operating with this stuff, he could have slipped into town and already been here and left, and we wouldn't know. It's just not – when it comes to the portal stuff, it's the reporting is not the same as with high school recruits. So, yeah, interesting guy. You know, physically, look, you're definitely talking about a bigger wing, and I do think – as opposed to some of these other guys we'll talk about defensively, I don't think there's much of a question that he could play in that position at Michigan State. Izzo has talked about wanting to add a bigger wing who can shoot it. You know, the percentage looks very good with Adley. The volume is low. I would have some questions about how much of an impact you could count on him to make as a shooter. But it could be that MSU has seen it and says, yeah, this guy could actually be productive if we got him up to 3 attempts a game, 4 attempts a game. And that might be part of the plan. But I think most people, you know, the decision was I don't know if we said this, or make sure I said this, you know, what the thought process was is he would make a visit. And he did, in fact, supposedly make a visit to Iowa State earlier this week. And so, again, the thought was he's going to make a decision by Friday. That didn't happen. So I don't know if he's still in the mix or not, but he was one of the first prominent names that got mentioned with MSU. Yeah.
That's to Michigan State advantage that he actually visited Ames, Iowa. That should definitely help.
Yeah, you would think, but, you know.
Spoken like a talk. All right. So another possible wing is Keyshawn Hall, 6'7", 220 pounds, from George Mason. Started at UNLV. He's originally from Cleveland, so he's a Midwest kid. He's averaged 16.6 points a game, 8.1 rebounds a game, shot 47, 36, and 84, averaging 4.7 free throw attempts a game. 53% of his shots were around the rim. And so he averaged, 4 three-attempts a game, so decent volume for him.
Yeah, having watched some video on him, he's an interesting guy. I mean, there's and I don't know what his situation is, because supposedly Arkansas was in heavily, but Arkansas's coach just left. Eric Musselman just took the job at USC, one of our Big Ten rivals.
Yeah, SoCal.
So is that mean USC is going to get involved? Does whomever the new staff at Arkansas try to stay involved? Don't know. But I would say this. If you look over the history of Tom Izzo's career, so I'm not just talking portal. I'm talking the whole run of taking transfers, because he's had them, you know, despite the reputation. He's actually had several guys who transferred in over the course of his career. Almost exclusively, they are guys from the Midwest. There are two exceptions that I can think of. Ben Carter was one, and then Tyson Walker was one. Other than that, you think about it, Bryn Forbes, Lansing, Aaron Harris, Indianapolis, Mike Chappelle, Southfield Lathrop High School. Why am I drawing a blank? Kid who transferred in from Valpo, Brandon Wood. Brandon Wood was an Indiana kid.
Yeah.
So they tend to be Midwest guys. So when I see that somebody who's mentioned with them in the portal is from the Midwest, it makes sense to me. Hall is a Cleveland guy. So they likely have a background on him from high school and AAU contacts in the state. He's an intriguing player. Pretty decent volume on the threes and decent, you know, mid-30s, success rate, so he could shoot it a little bit. Looks to me, what I've seen, like he's a capable passer. The free throw attempts thing, almost 8 free throw attempts a game. Maybe he was 5.
Almost 5. Was he 5? Almost 5.
Almost 5. Next player we're going to talk about is 8.
Right.
That's still pretty good, though. That's better than anybody, I believe, averaged at Michigan State this year. It's certainly more than A.J. Hogard got. It corresponds with this stat I saw, supposedly, and again, I'm taking this at face value, but a stat I saw with him is that 53% of his shots from the field were at the rim. So that tells you what his intention is as a player. Yeah, he's capable of shooting the jumper too. It's a weird, funky looking release, but he gets it to go. But he's also living in the lane a lot. He's getting to the rim, and he's a big physical kid to the point that I'm not 100% convinced about whether he could defend on the wing. That would be my question. And you don't see defensive possessions on the highlight reels. So I don't know. But, man, offensively, I get it. That's and one other note on him. He has changed his body radically. You know, when his name surfaced, I looked at his sportsreference.com listing, and it had him as 6'7", 250. So I said, wow.
Wow.
That's a big boy for the wing. And then I looked at the clips from him playing at George Mason. I said, that guy maybe weighs 220, 225. Then I went back further down the rabbit hole, found clips of him in high school, his senior year, that, oh, that's what happened. This guy went through a body transformation. So he put in a lot of work, and I get the sense more so this last year than his freshman year at UNLV. But he transformed his body. So that means, obviously, he's capable of maybe being better defensively than he would have been otherwise. That would be one thing you conclude from it. But the other thing is, it does tell you something about his work ethic.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
That he had the ability to do that. That kind of fits. So, it remains to be seen. He's a traveling man. He's played, if you count his last 3 years of high school, he's played at 5 schools in 5 years. That is not the normal Michigan State profile, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right. We know that. But hey, you can't. I think he's an intriguing name to me, at least. We'll have to see if Michigan State has made contact, according to the player. Whether that blows up into full-blown interest, we'll have to see.
A final wing is Frankie Fiddler. I think it'd be Fiddler, just one D.
Yeah,
6'7" wing from Omaha, both the city and the school, averaging 20.1 points a game, 6.3 rebounds a game, shooting 45, 36, and 85. Takes about 4.5 threes a game, averages almost 8 free throws a game.
Yeah.
And so he's down to sticking around in Nebraska, playing either Nebraska or Creighton, or potentially Wisconsin, and then Michigan State.
Yeah, and it's worth noting he's visited the other 3 schools on his list. He's slated to visit Michigan State next Friday. So you would assume after that will be a decision. Very interesting player. Again, my questions with him are on the defensive end because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, right.
And he doesn't seem like in watching clips, I don't see like a high-end athlete. So there would be a question for me there, but clearly Michigan State's bringing him in for a visit. They're serious. It's worth noting the Wisconsin connection. He played high school basketball with Chucky Hepburn, who's also from Omaha. So that's what's going on there. Then you've obviously got the home state schools in Creighton and Nebraska, but MSU's in with a visit, so we'll have to see. Offensively, yeah, this is what you're looking for. Clearly a high-volume 3 shooter and a decent success rate there. I love almost 8 free throw attempts is crazy good. That means this is a guy who's playing downhill. He's active and dynamic, and he's forcing defenses to foul him. That's how you get 8 free throw attempts a game.
Yeah.
So 20 point a game scorer, even at the level, and I believe Omaha's at the, I can't remember whether they're in the Summit or the Horizon.
I think they're in the Summit.
I think they're in the Summit. Yeah, I think
with the Dakotas. Right. Yeah.
So yeah, so you know, it's a lower level of D1 to be sure, but I would suggest that there's, you wouldn't expect him to come in and score 20 points a night at the Big Ten level. But if you're saying, yeah, this is a guy who can come in and give us, you know, double-digit scoring, 12 points a game, I don't think that's crazy to expect. And Michigan State does need some scoring. You know, they lost a lot with Tyson Walker, Malik Hall gone, and A.J. Hogarth as well. So they got to, and a lot of that's going to come internally.
Yeah,
but you do probably want to add at least one guy who's something of a known quantity, yeah, as a scorer.
And with so experience. That would, yeah.
Yeah, that would be the theory with Fiddler. But interesting player. You know, I can't think of a guy Michigan State's had who's exactly like him in terms of profile at that position. Because he's a more aggressive offensive player than, say, Matt McQuaid was. You know, has some base similarities, someone like McQuaid. I'd love it if he could defend the way Matt could. I don't know that he can. But I would say with those three guys we've just talked about, I'm not convinced that any of them come in. You know, I think people have this vision in mind that everybody you add is going to be a player like on the level of Connect at Tennessee.
Yeah, everyone wants to find Dalton Connect. Yeah, right.
Right, right. Or Dalmasque at Illinois. And yeah, it doesn't necessarily work that way, but I do think these guys would all seem to be players that, even if they aren't automatic day one starters, they're going to play. They're going to be in your rotation. They give you a different kind of physical presence because they've all got size. So if you're running into a team like Illinois with Terrence Shannon, let's say, and you want to have a better physical matchup, well, these kind of guys would give you that. You know, they'd give Izzo that additional card to play in his rotation, which they don't have currently. And the freshmen aren't going to add that. So I get it from that perspective. And so I'd be, you know, whatever they're comfortable with, obviously. But I can see how any of these guys would make sense on the surface based on that.
Right. All right. And then the final portal name rumbling around is Javon Small, 6'2 guard playing Oklahoma State. Started at East Carolina. He's from South Bend. So again, back to your Midwest, yep, sort of roots observation. He averaged 15.1 points a game, 4.1 rebounds a game, shot 44, 37, and 87. And I guess the question there is, you know, are they really looking to add a 6'2"? Is he going to, would be, you know, a player? Do they need another guard?
Well, they don't, except I think that's my read of this. And by the way, his name got mentioned early, so it's been like whatever, 2-3 weeks, and you haven't heard anything else. That doesn't mean there isn't anything else going on,
right?
As we know, but there hasn't been a lot of movement on him from anybody. Obviously, a player who's done it, who's proven to be an effective offensive player at the Big 12 level. So, if you're saying could he translate to Michigan State, absolutely.
Sure.
I think he is probably more someone that you look at if, say, Jaden Akins were to leave.
Right. He's insurance policy.
I would be, and that assumes that, you know, he would come to Michigan State automatically. You never know about that, but
right.
I think that that's how I would view him. If Jaden Akins is back, I don't see him being a guy that Michigan State adds. Because you're right, he physically does not fit this mold that Izzo has publicly talked about, which is he would like to add some size on the wing.
Yeah, and I would imagine too at this point, well, that's just more speculative. I was just say if you're Jane Akins, you're looking to think about the portal, you probably would have announced by now in order to maximize your opportunities.
Could say,
but I don't know.
say that, but AJ Hogarth hasn't.
Right, you're right. He hasn't. Yeah, I'm sure.
I don't look. the fact that Izzo has been talking publicly about, and he's done it in a few different places over the last few days, about how they're planning on Jaden Akin sliding in Tyson Walker's role, and that's why they're not actively looking for a Tyson Walker replacement in the portal. That tells me that they've got a pretty good indication that Jaden's back.
Yeah, exactly. But
until it's done, you know, it's not done. So right. That's why you make these kind of moves like we're talking about with Small, just to be ready in case something you don't expect actually happens. It's also worth noting that the period for entry into the portal closes at the end of this month, so it doesn't go on indefinitely. We're going to know by the end of April. They've shortened the period by, I think, 15 days, or maybe it's 30 days this year. Maybe it was 60
last year. Yeah, I think it's in May.
But it's 30. It's 30 this year. So that's the expectation, that we're going to know by that. Now, they can take much longer than that, then go the whole summer to make decisions.
Yeah,
but
you just have to enter the portal. Yeah,
that's the deadline for entry. So we're going to know on this front within the next several weeks what things look like from that perspective. But, you know, and it's also, look, I'll go back to Trey Townsend again. Does Michigan State believe that he could play the wing? Well, if they did, he would absolutely fit. He's 6'6 and strong, so he would fit that mold. Maybe I could see it offensively, maybe. He comes from a program that was playing zone all year, so I just don't, and that's, in addition to whatever the physical limitations are, people say, well, Malik Hall did it, is the year before last. But I don't know that I believe that Trey Townsend is quite the same level of athlete that Malik Hall was. But I could be wrong. Michigan State staff might actually believe that's the case. And if they do, well, maybe that's something that fits into this discussion. Or, as we said, that could be a front court addition that then changes how they view the five. So we got a long way to go on this stuff. I mean, we just had the NIT wrap up. We're going to have the Final Four wrap up after this weekend. And then I think we'll probably likely see another wave. And also there are coaching changes going on. So there's that too. Indiana State, I mentioned the NIT, they just lost at the NIT final. It was a night or two ago. Their head coach is leaving to take the job at St. Louis. Now that's interesting, because normally when a guy from a successful program leaves to go somewhere else, it's frequent that guys will follow him. Yep. Like, for example, at Michigan, I expect they're probably going to land a couple of FAU players. That's a reasonable expectation, right?
Yep.
Does that happen in Indiana State? Now, it's interesting because Schertz is moving to St. Louis. Well, St. Louis has money, and they support their basketball program. They're serious about it. So they might well be players, I would expect. That's where my analysis would start. Well, are some of these Indiana State guys going to look to go to St. Louis? Maybe. But maybe they have aspirations of going high major rather than mid-major plus, which is how I would characterize St. Louis. I don't know. So there could be guys coming in the portal there. There could be guys, again, Zed Key just announced for Ohio State yesterday. So there's still lots of moving parts here. We don't know yet the entirety of who's going to even be available in the portal to recruit. So that can change the dynamic for Michigan State as we go also.
Yeah, for sure.
But right now, that's what we know.
So are you saying there's a chance that Michigan State lands Robbie Avila?
No, not him. But you know what? There are another couple guys on that team. There was that kid, was his name Kent? They had a 6'8 kid that kind of played a hybrid 3-4 that I was very impressed with when they played Michigan State. And that's the kind of guy that if he were available, I could see, well, maybe Michigan State kicks the tires on that one, So my point is, there are going to be guys guaranteed, I bet the house, there are going to be guys who leave at least some of these teams in the Final Four.
Sure.
I don't know how many, but there will be guys.
Yeah.
Just
the nature of the business now.
Yeah.
So We'll be back. We're going to talk about, I'm guessing, I mean, unless there's a move and something happens as far as an addition or a new deletion from the roster of the coaching staff, we'll be back with probably our discussion on the Big Ten, just in the rest of the teams, the Big Ten. We already sort of talked about Michigan State's season. We've always had a discussion about the rest of the Big Ten, and it'd be fun talking about Michigan and how they're totally fell apart. So we'll have that discussion also, and then we'll just kind of keep plugging along with news as far as Michigan State's additions and subtractions throughout the year. And then I think that's pretty much it. I mentioned it just as we started the show, but they're great sponsors of the show. Please visit them because the support show. I didn't go through the live reads to this show just because I'm kind of out of practicing. You guys, we know the segments. So it is, I've noticed, I was looking at my front door today, and my front door is one, it's a really nice wooden front door. I always have to stain it every 2 years because it falls apart just because of, I always assume it's a sun damage. Turns out it was a water. So the water was like, it was splashing it from the eaves above. And now I got those gutters. Man, it is, my door is still in pristine condition after a whole winter. And I couldn't be happier to not have to sand it down and stain it and put varnish on. So maybe you have a situation like that in your house. If you do, the Brothers of Josie Gutters, they're the ones to call. Either the West East Side or the West Side State, you can find the contact information on the support page. Also, my windows are also very, very clean because I had the squeegee squad of Grand Rapids come out. You should as well. Either they can take care of your business, they can take your house, maybe your high rise, whatever it is. If you're, even if you're the state capitol, they take care of those windows as well. They can wash your house too, whatever you need done. You can find them at the support page. Also, Nudge Printing provides a great gift prizes for our bracket challenge. And it doesn't look like Dom is going to win. Although, again, if my wife wins, she will not be receiving a prize. So if you end up in fourth place, maybe you'll actually be in third place. So, you know, and we do know confidently at this point that Rod has no chance of being any higher than 111th. I think you're definitely done scoring. And then finally, our new sponsor of the show, the Christian Brothers of Automotive, Grand Rapids area. Although there are lots of Christian Brothers around the country, if you're listening outside the state of Michigan. But if you want auto work done, they do very honest auto mechanics. They take care of things real well. My son works there. It's been a great career move for him. They're just a fantastic business. We'll have more of them later as we get to know them a little bit better, sort of their specials and things like that. So check out all our sponsors. You can find it on the support page. If you want to support the show, you can also do it there as well. That's all at thefinalfoursontheschedule.com/support. And so I guess until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.